Chapter 60. They had erected a platform so the entire army could see the wedding. Men had already gathered from their fires, and their officers were beginning to organize them into ranks for the ceremony as the moon rose. Besides the army, several thousand commoners and camp followers had crowded around the platform. "Logan," Count Drake said, closing the flap of the little tent where Logan was getting ready. "You can't do this." For a long moment, Logan didn't answer. When it emerged, his voice was low and stern. "What else can I do? The one God says he will provide an escape from every temptation."
"I don't believe in your God, Drake."
"Truth doesn't depend on your belief in it." Logan shook his head slowly, like a bear emerging emaciated after months of hibernation.
"Marrying Tara is no temptation. My father married a beautiful, poisonous woman, and I saw what it did to him."
"A lesson you would do well to heed. The difference being that your mother wasn't capable of nearly as much destruction." Logan's eyes flashed, the bear slowly raising his head to tower above all others.
"If there's a way out that doesn't destroy us, you tell me what it is. I don't want to marry."
"I didn't say marriage was the temptation."
"Then what is?"
"Power," Count Drake said, thumping his cane. "Damn it, man! It's marry her or doom us all. You think I haven't figured out a way to get the majority of these people to follow me? I have. I could take maybe 2/3 of them and leave. That would leave 1/3 to die. You want me to ask thousands to die so I can avoid a bad marriage?"
"No, Logan." Count Drake leaned on his cane. He looked like he needed its support.
"My question is, can you be the king that you need to be with such a queen beside you? Tara Grayson was caught off guard today. You caught her in a moment of weakness. That won't happen again."
"Well, thank you for illustrating the bleakness of my future," Logan said. "But if you can't help me escape it, help me get dressed."
"My king," Count Drake said. "Sometimes the way out of a hole isn't climbing."
"Get out," Logan said.
Count Drake bowed and left sadly. Logan lifted the circlet and put it on his head. Mama Kay had seen to it that he looked a king. He had been shaved, his hair cut, his body anointed with oils and adorned with furs. He was dressed in a fine dark gray tunic and cloak trimmed with white samite. He'd reached the age of majority immediately before the coup, but he'd forgotten to choose his own sigil. Now he saw that Mama Kay had chosen one for him. It incorporated the Gyre's white gerfalcon on a field sable, but his falcon wore broken chains on its feet, and the sable field was a black circle reminiscent of the hole. The gerfalcon's wings were spread. It was a worthy sigil. His father would have been proud.
"What would you do, father?"
As a young man, his father had married to save the family, with the benefit of hindsight. Would he have done it again? The tent flap opened, and Mama Kay stepped inside. She looked at him with a shallow but genuine compassion. She couldn't understand. She'd never loved as Logan had loved. To her, it must look like this was the obvious choice. Marry Tara, deal with the problems later. In his position, Mama Kay would scheme and manipulate and have Tara killed if it came to it.
"It's time," she said.
"The sigil is perfect," Logan said.
"Thank you.
Did you notice the wings?" she asked.
"The wingtips extend beyond the circle, Your Majesty. The gerfalcon will always fly free."
Together, they walked up onto the platform. It was a circle almost the same size as the whole. It was a circle to symbolize the perfect, eternal, unbreakable nature of marriage. As Logan climbed, with thousands of eyes turned on him, to take his place right at the center where the fall to death had been, his heart lurched. He felt sick, claustrophobic. He remembered stretching over the hole, stretching as far as he could. For what? For pissed-on bread he wouldn't give to an animal. Music began playing, and his pissed-on bread stepped up daintily onto the platform. Part of Logan was ravenous for her, as he had been ravenous in the hole. For the past 3 months he'd been so weak, so starved, so preoccupied with surviving that he'd barely spared a thought for sex. Before the hole, it seemed he'd barely spared a thought for anything else. Now that he was out and regaining his strength, that old Logan was coming back. Tara Grayson was tall and lithe, her curves almost boyish, but her smile was all woman. She moved like a woman who knew what men liked and knew that she had it. The starving, greedy part of Logan wanted to fuck her. And pissed on bread always looked so good. Until you tasted it. But at least it filled you up, no matter how you felt about it afterward. At least he'd have sex. By the gods, at 21 he was still a fucking virgin. The irony of the thought made him smile grimly. Tara saw the smile and smiled back. She did look fantastic. Her hair was teased up into, well, something fancy. Logan wondered how many tailors had been cursing at each other for the last 2 hours, as they'd somehow altered one of her dresses into a wedding dress. It was the traditional green of fertility and new life, slim cut to Tara's slim body, with ornate groom ties up the back. And a long expanse of leg exposed that was certainly not traditional, but welcome nonetheless. It was completed with a stylish veil, symbolizing chastity that worked perfectly with the dress, if not so well with the woman in it. Well, I'll have as much sex as I want, if her reputation is at all deserved. The thought sloshed in his stomach like warm piss. No, better not to think about her reputation. Whatever he felt, Tara Grayson somehow pulled off what he had thought was impossible. She was sexy and regal at the same time. To her it was all power, whether it came from her status or her personality or her body. They were all tools to impose her will. Power. Count Drake said the temptation was power. Tara had come to stand beside him and took his hand, shyly. The people cheered. It was just like Janine Gunder had taken his hand when her father had announced their marriage. Logan swallowed his rising gorge. For Janine, it had been a spontaneous act. Tara had been at that dinner. She'd seen what Janine had done and how people had approved. She was imitating Janine deliberately. "Relax," Tara said. "You're 5 minutes away from everything you ever wanted." "You're a fool if you believe that, Tara." Logan painted a smile on his face and willed his body to relax. No, it wasn't what he would have chosen. But he would be able to change everything. He could defeat King Orsul. He could root out the Sakage. He could abolish the poor laws. He could... That was it. That was what Count Drake had meant. That was the temptation of power. He'd turned his ambition in his own mind. "It isn't for me," he'd told himself. "It's for the people." But that wasn't altogether true, was it? He'd liked ordering Gorky's death. He'd liked dismissing the Count. Logan spoke and things happened. People obeyed. He'd been so powerless for so long in the hole that the idea of never being subject to anyone was honey on his tongue. "Fine, Count Drake, I understand. Now, where's the way out?" It was too late. On one side stood a hecatonarch in his rich cloak, 100 colors for the 100 gods. On the other stood a man in simple brown robes, a patter of the one god. Duke Weseros took his place in the middle. Terra had made sure that their marriage would be performed in triplicate. The cheering crescendoed as 15,000 people shouted themselves hoarse for the couple they thought would save them.
"May I address the people?" Logan asked.
"Absolutely not," Terra said. "What kind of ploy is this?"
"It's not a ploy. I just wish to speak to those who will bleed and die for us. I haven't had the chance to do that."
"You're going to set them against me," Terra said.
"How about," Duke Weseros said, "how about Logan swears not to say anything negative about you, and if he does, I'll step in and stop him. Is that acceptable, my lord?"
"Yes."
"My lady," Duke Weseros said,
"he is their king.
Make it quick."
"Logan,
5 minutes,"
Duke Weseros said. He stepped close and lowered his voice.
"And may the spirit of Timaeus Rinder inspire you."
It was a contingent declaration of support. Timaeus Rinder had been an orator of such skill, he'd turned a chariot race loss into a coup, though he had been bound by exactly the restrictions that Duke Weseros had put on Logan. In framing the rules the way he had, Duke Weseros was saying, "If you can get the people on your side, I'll come too."
"My friends, tomorrow we will stand together in the clash and roar of battle."
Logan had barely spoken the first sentence when his words were doubled and redoubled in volume. He paused, then saw Master Nile standing near the front, smiling. Logan pretended that it wasn't important, and in a moment, everyone else did too.
"Tomorrow, we will face a foe whose face we know. You have seen his face darkening your doors. You have seen his boots muddying your floors. You have seen his torches setting fire to your fields. You felt his fists and whips and scorn. But you refused to yield."
Logan's nerves and self-criticism. "Could I have said that better? Is my voice steady? Why is it so hard to get a full breath?" faded as he looked at the upturned faces of the people who would be his people. He'd had no idea just a few months ago who the Cenarian people were. He'd known and loved the Gyre's small folk, but had shared the nobleman's fashionable disdain for the unwashed masses. How easy it was to ask a nameless, faceless mob to die.
"My friends, I spent the last 3 months in the depths of Hell's Asshole. I was trapped with the shit and the stink of humanity. I spent my time fearing death and things worse than death. They took my clothes. They took my dignity. I saw the good suffer with the evil. I saw a woman violated and a woman kill herself so she wouldn't be violated again. I saw good men and bad make their deals with the darkness, and I made my own. To survive. My friends, I was imprisoned beneath the ground. You were imprisoned above it. You knew the fears I knew. You saw the horrors I saw, and worse. We had friends killed. We knew that to resist was to die, and my friends, my people, we looked at the odds against us and we saw no hope. We fled. We hid."
Logan paused.
"And the people were silent. Were you there with me?"
Logan asked.
"Did you feel the rage? Did you feel powerless? Did you watch evil and do nothing to oppose it? Were you ashamed?"
The men and women didn't look to the left or the right, afraid that their neighbors would see the tears in their eyes. Their heads nodded, "Yes, yes."
"I was ashamed," Logan said. Let me tell you what I learned in the hole. I learned that in suffering we find the true measure of our strength. I learned that a man can be a coward one day and a hero the next. I learned that I'm not as good a man as I thought I was. But the most important thing is this. I learned that though it costs me dearly, I can change. I learned that what has been broken can be made new. Do you know who taught me that? A prostitute. In a bitter woman who made her living in shame, I found honor, courage, and loyalty. She inspired me, and she saved me. Today, there are women here who taught you the same lessons. Many of you are ashamed of your mothers and your wives and your daughters who were raped, who were pressed into sexual slavery at the castle, who sold themselves in brothels so they might survive. You've shunned them, rejected them. But I say your wives, mothers, and daughters have shown us how to fight. They gave us the Nocta Himata. They have given us courage. They have shown us the road from shame to honor. Let every woman who fought that night stand forth. A few women stepped forward immediately. Bolstered by their courage, others emerged. Men moved aside silently. In moments, a crowd of 300 women gathered in front of the platform. Some let tears fall, but their backs were straight, their chins high. Men in the ranks were openly weeping now, not just the men who must have known this small sample, but men from the countryside, men who must have known their own women to be shamed and dishonored, men who were now ashamed of themselves. Today, Logan said, I declare you the inaugural members of the Order of the Garter. A garter because you have taken shame and turned it to honor. Display it with pride and tell your grandchildren of your courage forever. And no man shall ever join your order unless he displays the highest levels of heroism and courage. The people cheered. It was the best thing Logan had ever done. I'm afraid, Logan said, quieting the crowd, that your garters aren't ready yet. It seems we don't have all the materials on hand. You see, we're going to make them out of Caladoran battle flags. They cheered. What do you say, men? You think we can help them out? They cheered louder. Now, brothers, please. Welcome your beloved. They need you. And sisters, welcome these shamed and broken men. They need you. There are just a few more things for me to say. Logan breathed deeply. He'd gone longer than he intended already. He hadn't established the Order of the Garter to gain support. It was just something that needed to be fixed. But somehow, wherever he looked, he saw faces full of hope. A few months ago, I didn't want to be king, Logan said. But something changed me in the hole. Before the hole, I could see you as a mob. Now I see you as brothers and sisters. I can ask you to bleed with me, to die with me. And I do. Many of us will bleed tomorrow, and some of us will die. He looked down at the hole on which he stood. Is this your way out, Count Drake? Oh, Father, would this make you proud? I can ask you to bleed, to throw off your chains, but I cannot ask you to bleed for my ambition. The crowd quieted. In the hole, I learned that a man or woman may wield power over life and death, but there is no power over love. My friends, I love you and this nation and the freedom we will win, but I feel no love for this woman. I will not marry Tara Grayson, not this day, not ever. What? Tara Grayson yelled. She stepped forward. Stop him, Havrin!
But Duke Weseros held her back, and Master Niall didn't amplify her voice.
Terra, the Duke said, if you try to stop him now, it'll be civil war right here.
A roar was going through the crowd, and men were looking at their neighbors, unsheathing their weapons, and trying to see who would join which side.
Stop!
Logan cried, and his voice boomed over the assembly. He held up his hands.
I won't have a single man die to make me king, much less 1,000.
He turned.
Lady Grayson, will you swear fealty to me?
Her eyes flashed, and this time Master Niall did amplify her voice.
Not if it cost 1,000 lives.
Logan held up his hands to forestall the furor.
My friends, we have no hope of defeating Kalidor if we are not united. So,
he turned to Terra Grayson, who looked less than beautiful with a rage-splotchy face.
Grant me that you will establish the Order of the Garter, and that you will pardon my followers of all crimes up to this day. Grant me that, and I will swear fealty to you.
Terra Grayson hesitated only a moment. Her eyes were wide with disbelief, but she recovered before any cry could go up.
Done, she said. Swear it now.
Logan knelt and reached toward the center of the platform where Terra stood. In the perfect inverse of a gerfalcon stretching its wings beyond the black circle of submission and imprisonment, he reached his hand back in. It made all the difference.
Sometimes, the only way out of the hole isn't climbing.
He touched her foot in the oath of submission.
In recognition of your valor,
Queen Grayson said in a tone that dripped poison,
you will have the honor of leading the first charge. Your honeyed words will doubtless impress the Verdmeisters.